Matt Gross, chief blogger in the Dean campaign. You make it look awfully easy on the page, but I wonder if you've changed nomination politics radically forever. What do you think?
I think quite possibly that may be true. I certainly think a lot of what we're doing will be repeated and will become standard operating procedure in the future. But I think what we've done, what we've been able to do with the blog, is bring community back into American presidential politics. Before this election, before this cycle, certainly since 1960, presidential politics has been a broadcast medium and a spectator sport to some degree, where the television broadcasts some information about a candidate. You receive that information, and unless you live in Iowa or New Hampshire, the message has always been, send us your money and wait. And if you're lucky, by the time your state gets around to voting, maybe your guy will still be in the race. And what the blog has enabled people to do, no matter where they live, is get involved from day one on the campaign, and it's tremendously exciting.
I keep wondering what Teddy White would make of all of this. I mean, The Making of the President 1960 by Theodore White was the manual for most of us coming after it about how these things worked. And at this stage of that campaign, late summer of 1959, JFK was sitting around Hyannisport with Kenny O'Donnell and Larry O'Brien, talking on the phone, I suppose, to Dick Daley, John Bailey in Connecticut, spending a lot of Dad's money. But nobody else knew about it, and they didn't get into the race. They didn't announce until January of the campaign year. I mean, literally, where would Teddy White begin?
You know, it's absolutely incredible. I think one of the things that is going on here in 2003 is that people want to get involved. Certainly, there are a number of Democrats who are clearly dissatisfied by the results of 2002 and 2000, and they've been waiting for a candidate to come along who will give them hope and make them feel energized again. And I think Howard Dean is doing that. And what the Internet allows them to do is find that person earlier. So there are people out there feeling that desire to get involved, to feel some hope again in terms of national politics. And before the Internet, you relied upon perhaps your local paper or television news to give you a little snippet of coverage every once in a while. But now anybody with any interest, whether it's political or otherwise, can really delve into the Internet and blogs and really take up as much information as they want and participate.
Can I say I'm impressed by your open thread, fact-checking the Washington Post every day, almost before it hits the street, a lot of commentary back and forth, a lot of dissent, or at least testing of the premises. There's so many things I'd like you to talk about here. I want to know who is Matt Gross. I wanted to know if you're the special sauce in this whole campaign. I want to know what's the Karl Rove, George Bush counter move. I'd like to know whether you've instituted a kind of de facto instant campaign reform that goes way beyond McCain-Feingold without even legislation. But let's start with the who you question.
Okay.
Where did Matt Gross come from?
Well, I've lived half my life in the West and half my life in the East, and I've moved around quite a bit and done a number of very sort of desultory career paths. I was a drummer in a rock band that signed to Beggar's Banquet in London, and then I went on to become a river guide on the Colorado River and went on to become a private pilot and work in Utah politics and get a degree in environmental studies. But throughout that, throughout all those different sort of chapters in my life, the one thing I've always really believed in is writing. And really, I come to this as a writer and started blogging about Howard Dean in December, actually, of 2002.
What kind of writer? You're a freelancer, but what sort of themes? What interests you?
Certainly politics, and fiction and environmental topics.
Can I flesh out your literary gods here?
Oh, we could, but it probably wouldn't, it would be traditional.
John Muir.
F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Okay.
After 2000 and 2002, I'd always been interested in presidential politics, but became extraordinarily interested. And one of the things that brought me to blogging was, as a freelance op-ed writer, you just can't get the stuff out fast enough. An event happens, and this is, I think, a problem happening with print journalism in general. You can't keep up with television and everything else as a writer, and so. But blogging actually enables you to do that. Rather than having to go through the cycle of an event happens, you write an opinion piece on it, you fire it off to an editor and maybe wait a day or two, and if you wait a day or two, geez, it's old news by that point. What blogging allows writers to do, and journalists and opinion makers in the written form, is to really participate in that rapid news cycle to a degree that has never been available before.
My own two bits is that a lot of this is about a failure in institutional journalism, and very particularly around this war. Nobody in big journalism warned us or warned the Bush administration what we were getting into in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a kind of frenzied search now for more authentic, reliable, genuine, on-the-ground word about the world. And the blog, even your blog, is one way to do it.
I think that's certainly true. I think there's a disconnect between what many people feel in middle America and what they receive, on the news or read in the paper, and what they hear out of Washington from their politicians. And that disconnect, I think, is partially why Howard Dean has been such a surprise to, many purveyors of conventional wisdom.
So you begin with some frustration as an op-ed writer and a freelance, then what?
Well, then I discover Howard Dean. And like many people, I think this is the guy. This is the person who has what it takes. He's saying exactly what needs to be said. And I start to write about him, and the more I write about him, the more I think, it's not enough for me just to sit here in Utah and write about him. I need to go to Burlington, and I need to get involved in the campaign. So
Can I just stop you on that point? Was it the guy, or was it the moment and the sense of a movement?
It really was the guy. I mean, at that time, this is January, February. Certainly Howard Dean had a buzz on the blogs. But, there certainly wasn't this the tremendous groundswell that we see now. He was at 2% in most polls.
Hmm.
Most people didn't know who he was, But his positions and what he was saying made sense to me and spoke to me. So certainly I came out to Burlington with this notion that Howard Dean has this buzz on the blogs and people are talking about him quite a bit on the Internet. And ironically, at the time, the Dean for America website was the last place he would go for the latest information on Howard Dean, simply because there was really nobody updating it. They updated it when they had time, and it was slow compared to the discussions that were happening over at MyDD or Daily Cause or some of the other websites that talk actively about Democratic presidential politics. So I showed up one day in Burlington unannounced and knocked on Joe Trippi's door, and I had no idea who Joe Trippi was. And I said, kind of kicked the door, and shyly said, I'm a writer and I'd like to come to work for you guys. I think Howard Dean has what it takes to win. And there are these things called blogs, and I write for this site called MyDD. And Joe Trippi, who had been kind of busy doing something else, suddenly sat straight up in his chair and looked over at me and said, "You're hired. Go get your stuff and get back here." And unbeknownst to me, he had been reading MyDD and following the blogs. And, as he read MyDD, he thought, this kid's on message. He knows what's going on. And, it was sort of a weird crossing of the stars, as it were. Because had I chosen a different candidate and knocked on a different campaign manager's door, I may not have even gotten an audience. And certainly, probably, we would not be where we are today.
Could you have done it for John Edwards, John Kerry, anybody else?
I don't think so. I certainly would not have. But, I think certainly Trippi's knowledge of the Internet and willingness to try new things and embrace, a new vision of campaign politics was critical to that decision to actually hire some kid from Utah, 31-year-old guy from Utah, who sort of shows up and says, I love this candidate and let me start a blog for you.
Hmm.
That may have fallen on deaf ears. This was back at the end of February, very beginning of March. I mean, certainly now.
Could I ask you, Matt Gross, what's the Karl Rove, George Bush move here? And I want to just remind us all that during the war and the run-up to the war, you could certainly argue that bloggers like Instapundit and Andrew Sullivan gave a critical cover to President Bush with a lot of energy, sometimes depth. What if the Bushniks can blog too?
Well, they certainly, can. And obviously, there are conservative bloggers who blog in favor of George W. Bush. But, there are moods that exist beyond the blogs. Certainly, I think blogs play an opinion-making role, but they also largely reflect how people are feeling it, and they both may be influenced, but also largely receive the public mood. And I think the public mood on George W. Bush is certainly shifting, as the economy remains down, as Iraq remains a problem, as the deficit soars. All of these things don't bode very well for George W. Bush.
Can he blog his way out of it? I mean, is there a blogging base for that kind of a conversation? Or are blogs only given to a certain kind of rising tide among a certain well-educated and articulate class of people?
No, I actually think that blogs are, I think it's an incredible medium that is probably underrated. And at this point in the sort of intellectual discourse about blogs, I think we all probably make a mistake of trying to too narrowly define what a blog is and what a blog can be. And certainly here we are talking about political blogs, but there are blogs for all sorts of issues and, you know, interests and audiences. And I think that will continue. I mean, the blog is just such a flexible medium that it really is incredible. It would be, you know, for us to try to too narrowly define it right now would be like us trying to declare that all novels should be picaresque novels. You know, obviously, the form is broad enough that there'll continue to be a lot of creativity and a lot of newness and freshness and innovation within blogs in general.
You had a very interesting entry on your own blog page, and I'll refer people to it, where you asked your readers, what's your view on how blogs can or are creating a better election? What did you distill out of that?
I think what people have said, you know, certainly in the threads and what I've distilled from the comments and my experience on the blog is what's really incredible is the sense of community that is forming around the campaign and the sense of ownership that people feel towards the campaign. People are able to come and participate and interact with Joe Trippi, the campaign manager, or myself, or Zephyr Teachout, and, you know, really form human relationships in what was, before the blog, perhaps, a slightly less human, more of a broadcast, disconnected form of participation. The other thing that's happening, I think, that's really incredible, is a sort of lateral sharing of information, where, before a blog, you might have a great idea for what a candidate or a campaign might choose to do, but how did you share that piece of information with the campaign? And usually you had to fight your way up through some kind of hierarchical
right.
structure. Whereas now you can post it on the blog and people will discuss it, and if it's a great idea, you know, a lot of the times we'll adopt it. I mean, a lot of...
Well, I noticed that. There's a lot of, you know, you're fact-checking the Washington Post before it hits the street, or Newsweek, or commenting on this sort of thing. I also wonder, though, you created such an adhesive community of able people. You scare a lot of other people. They're too smart. They're too confident. They're too clubby to be true. And there are a lot of vested interests, both in media and in money, that don't want a self-organized campaign like that. Do you worry about the very quality of the conversation alienating people who aren't in it, including, you know, big paper reporters and editorial writers and television executives?
I don't think so. You know, I think there's plenty of room and plenty of venues for, you know, intelligent discourse about politics. And, you know, certainly the blogs are in no danger of replacing traditional media whatsoever. I mean, all bloggers still rely upon the news that is gathered by traditional media. I mean, your typical political blogger would have nothing to say if he could not link to the New York Times or the Washington Post and then present, you know, perhaps a different take on it or, you know, agree with whatever the article is. And in terms of the audience being too sophisticated, I don't think so. I think what's happened really for 40 years is a continual underestimation of the American people's ability to participate in their own democracy.
Yep.
And, you know, that is democracy. When people talk and engage, that's exactly what this nation was founded on. And if blogs create an avenue for people to re-engage and participate again, I think it's wonderful and really, there can't be enough great hyperbolic things to be said about it.
Well, I like the way you say it. Let me ask a different question, but it's connected. Have you, in this whole process of fundraising on the web, enacted a kind of de facto campaign finance reform that goes well beyond the spirit and the law of McCain-Feingold without legislation?
I think what's happening, I think what the Internet allows people to do, and what Howard Dean's campaign really allows people to feel again, is that their participation makes a difference. Their small action or small contribution, when coupled with the actions of thousands and thousands of others, really makes a difference. And what the Internet probably allows to happen is a sort of real-time feedback. They can see that difference being made day by day by day. Whereas, you know, it used to be if you sent off a $25 check, you might not know until the end of the quarter if your $25 made a difference and if your candidate was doing well. And you might not even know because your local paper might not even really publish the numbers, you know.
Well, you might have been afraid anyway that it would be drowned out by gobs of soft money from some PAC.
Right.
Let me ask two different questions, though, about money. One, will the big money interests let you get away with grassroots fundraising? I'm thinking of a funny moment. I think it was the 92 campaign, but Jerry Brown was in a debate with somebody or other. Tom Brokaw was presiding, and Jerry Brown whipped out a sign, said, if you want to make a contribution, the number is 1-800, tra-la-la. And Tom Brokaw said, no, you can't do that. We don't go for that kind of thing.
Right.
And he sort of blocked the people right there. Can you get away with grassroots money?
Well, I think we can, and I think, you know, that's really a decision for the American people to make, you know, if they want.
But Tom Brokaw, in effect, made it for them in that case and said, no, we will have none of this populist fundraising on NBC's time.
Right. Well, certainly, you know, in 2003, people had a tremendous ability, thanks to the maturity of the Internet, to find their way onto the web and seek out the information they want. And, you know, that's an incredible shift in people's ability to access information. And certainly we see this all the time. When Howard Dean appears on television or in traditional media, we see a spike in traffic and people come to the site, you know, and it's people saying, I've never heard of this guy. I want to find out more information about him. Or maybe, oh, I remember this guy, Howard Dean. I like what I've heard. Let me go research him more. So people are really empowered by the Internet to acquire information for themselves, and I think that will make a tremendous difference.
Let me ask you another money question, Matt Gross. Howard Dean has used the web to make money as no candidate before. Can you use the web to spend money? In other words, to build your campaign, or are you essentially drawing money out of the web that you'll spend in traditional ways on television advertising?
No, I think the web has been extraordinarily important for us in terms of building out the traditional campaign, well, not the traditional campaign structure, but a campaign structure in all 50 states, you know, largely through meetup.com. We've been able to assemble 110,000 people who are self-organizing and laying the groundwork for Howard Dean in all 50 states of the union. You know, before the Internet, how would those people connect to each other, especially if they weren't already involved in, you know, the party process, if they weren't already somehow plugged into that hierarchy? It was very difficult for them to get involved. And what's been amazing about the Internet is people are able to take their enthusiasm for the candidate, find each other, reach out to each other, and start to organize among themselves. And with that freedom and sort of lack of hierarchy, we've seen a tremendous amount of people who haven't been engaged in politics before come back into the process come into the process for the first time.
But have you answered my question on how you'll spend the money differently?
Well, I think, you know, certainly the web as a medium in terms of advertising will be more important in this election, I think, in terms of some of the tools that we are building. For example, DeanLink, you know, certainly that's an expenditure of time and effort. And
I noticed that. Talk a little bit about DeanLink. Who thought that up?
DeanLink is, you know, it's been an idea that Joe Trippi has said, you know, how can we take the fact that right now, or, you know, up to a few months ago, because DeanLink just launched 10 days ago, you know, people have the ability to go to Meetup and enter their zip code and find a meeting and go once a month on a Wednesday. And then we created the Get Local tools, which allowed people to go and enter their zip code and either create their own event or find an event that's already been set up on any day and go to that. But how do people reach out individually to each other? And that's what DeanLink allows people to do. So it essentially allows you to say, I live here, who else lives here? And find that person. And then from that contact, you can see to whom that person is linked to. And you create a kind of 6 degrees of separation so that all of a sudden you may find that you do have an avenue to talk to the Democratic Party chair in your county. Or you may have the ability to realize what you didn't know, which is that your neighbor two doors down is an ardent Dean supporter, and you can go over and talk to him or her and, you know, sort of join forces to work together.
Last question or comment for me is just on the literary quality of your blog. It's well written, Matt. I keep wanting to know who Zephyr Teachout is, who's Kate O'Connor, as well as all the contributors, I mean, out there in the boonies.
Right.
Who's the kind of editor-in-chief?
Well, you know, I guess I play the role of editor-in-chief, but mostly that involves, you know, just controlling the flow of information, making sure we don't post one thing right on top of each other. You know, if we put up a major statement by Howard Dean, making sure it lives there at the top of the blog for a little while. But, you know, Kate O'Connor brings her own fresh, incredible, enthusiastic voice to the blog, and she's been a longtime aide to the governor and travels with him. Zephyr Teachout and I were the first two people on the Internet team way back in March, and she's actually a lawyer who taught herself HTML to come to work for Howard Dean on the Internet campaign. And, you know, we've just lucked into several people who are able to write well and bring really incredible personalities, I think, to the campaign.
It's a very interesting page. Matthew Gross, this is fun, and we'll talk again, but let me just conclude by saying, I think if Teddy White were alive writing The Making of the President 2004, however it comes out in the end, he'd begin the story at the start of the Dean blog sometime, what was it, March of 2003.
That's, yeah, we started the blog March 15, 2003, but I think the point where the blog really became powerful and started to play its role in changing how the campaign is run in 2003 and 2004 is on June 10th when we relaunched what was the Dean Call to Action blog as Blog for America, and we relaunched it with new software and enabled commenting. And all of a sudden, the feedback and the participation of people everywhere was enabled. With that one act, once people were able to comment, the discourse between the campaign really began, and it's been an incredible journey ever since then, and an incredible level of participation on behalf of so many people. It really ended the internet as a broadcast medium in politics and began it as an interactive conversational medium.
It's a very interesting story and a very compelling page. Matt Gross, thank you very, very much for walking us through blog politics in the Dean campaign.
Thank you for having me.